Well, thank you very much for coming, everybody. First of all, you probably be able to tell I'm not Dr. Deepak Kumar. Unfortunately, Deepak had to cancel his travel plans at the last minute due to illness, so I've stepped in on his behalf. My name's Dan Richings, and I lead the European operations for Adaptiva. So a few quick notes about the company before I start. We're Microsoft Gold Partner, and as you can see by the bottom of the screen there, we've won a lot of awards recently in the last few years. We're established quite a few years ago, but we've sort of started making a name for ourselves in the last couple of years. So I'm going to take us into the presentation. So as the title suggests, this session's about massive scale Windows 10 deployments using Config Manager. Now, when we think of operating system deployment in general, there's a lot of challenges associated with that. Challenges such as injecting drivers and capturing and maintaining that image and task sequence and all the variables and things that go along with that. These are soft challenges. These are challenges that are fairly easily overcome with product knowledge and experience. These are not the sort of challenges I'm going to be discussing in this session. This session is going to be more around the hard challenges. So I'm going to talk through some of these challenges. We're going to build a machine with Windows 10 using some pretty innovative technologies. And I'm going to explain how we as a company go about solving some of these more difficult challenges. So the first challenge I hope to address is Pixie. Now, getting Pixie set up in an environment is no easy feat, especially in a large environment. So I'll take an example of one of our larger implementations. It's a UK bank, 350,000 clients. 10,000 locations, 100 offices. Getting Pixie set up in an environment such as that, very, very challenging indeed. They actually had a five-year project to configure Pixie at all locations. So things that need to be concerned with when you're thinking about Pixie, things like IP helpers, DHCP scope options, and of course you need a server at every location running server class OS on the distribution point role. Next challenge is content distribution and storage. How do you get the content for your operating system out to hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of locations? Operating system content, by its nature, is huge. You've got, obviously, the image, you've got all the drivers, you've got all the applications, all the software updates that go alongside that image. So how do you get that out to remote locations down narrow WAN pipes? And then what do you do with it when it gets there? Where do you store it? And again, you need servers everywhere. The next challenge is user state migration. Typical profile size can range up to, well, in excess of 10, 20, 30 gig. So what do you do with this user profile data when you want to migrate that? So you can either have a server local to that subnet, or you can have the data go across the WAN. Trying to upload and then download 20, 30 gigs worth of data down narrow WAN pipes would take forever. And then the last challenge, version control. Keeping that image up to date at all locations, managing changes, new drivers, new applications, and who's going to sync all of these images? So the technology that we're going to use or to demonstrate how we go about solving some of these challenges, is represented here by these four technology pillars. The first pillar I'm going to talk about is peer-to-peer Pixie. So this is Pixie, but instead of running from a server, it's going to be run from existing clients and handled on a peer-to-peer basis. So I'm just going to flick into a quick demo. I'm going to start this virtual machine up, and I'm going to Pixie boot it. So this will look quite familiar, I'm sure. The one key difference to bear in mind here is this is running in an environment without any Pixie service points whatsoever. We are Pixie booting directly from a peer client. So I'll just let that boot up. And you'll see that it Pixie boots exactly as normal, straight into the task sequence. And I'm going to kick this one off, and we're going to build Windows 10 64-bit. So while that's building, I'm just going to show you how easy this is to configure Pixie to work via peer clients. So this is our configuration utility. It's our workbench. And enabling Pixie is as simple as checking this box to enable it on the system, specifying a location to your ADK, selecting whether you want to enable the support of UEFI devices as well as legacy BIOS, and also whether you want to enable support for unknown computers. You then target this policy at a collection, either a config manager collection, or ticking the box here to use all Adaptiva clients. And then the machines that you've specified in here have the option to become a Pixie service point. So the way it will work is one machine per subnet will become a Pixie service point. The other machines on that subnet can use that to Pixie boot, and a boot image will also be provided from one of these peer clients. What this means is instead of having a single Pixie server running on a server, you've now got a potential of all machines in that office location that can service that Pixie request. So if one machine goes down, within 5 seconds, another one will take its place and will be able to service those Pixie requests. So what you're left with is a Pixie role that refuses to die. Fault tolerance taken to extremes. If I go a little bit further down, we're also able to specify workflows that can execute as part of the Pixie process. So we are providing here the only programmable Pixie service role that's available. And from here, you can control what boot image gets advertised to which clients, and you can control which machines are actually allowed to Pixie boot based on any criteria that you specify, whether that's looking up machines from a text file, from an Excel spreadsheet, from a database. You can control with a high level of accuracy the machines that you want to be able to Pixie boot. So are there any questions on peer-to-peer Pixie? So the next technology that I'd like to show you is the predictive bandwidth harvesting. So when we're talking about getting this large quantity of data out to remote offices, places with extremely slow links, it's a large quantity of data to get down narrow WAN pipes. So we need some way of making sure that we don't saturate those links. And that's where the predictive bandwidth harvesting comes in. What we do is we actually monitor the edge queues on the routers to ensure that we only put data onto that WAN link when there's space for it. So if you imagine a standard WAN link, you've got a router on the near side of the WAN and on the far side of the WAN. Now, the one closest to the sender, as congestion occurs, that queue of data waiting to enter that WAN is going to grow. So we'll detect that lengthening of the queue, and we won't put any more data into it. When that goes down, we'll see that there's room for some data, and we'll put data in. If there's room for 5 packets, we'll put 5 packets in. I've got a demonstration video to show you. So what we've got here are 4 virtual machines. We've got a sender, we've got a receiver. At the top here, we've got 2 other machines. The sender and the receiver are connected via a T1 connection, Cisco 1700 series router. This represents a standard WAN link. These 2 are connected on that same WAN link. And if I kick off the video, we're going to start a transfer between the 2. That's this green bar at the bottom here that's about to start will show the current utilization of that WAN link. So we can see we're using pretty much 100% of that WAN link. Now, if we flick over to 2 completely separate VMs, but on the same 2 networks, and then we drag a file from one machine to another, watch what happens as we start that transfer off. So the WAN utilization drops right down to the point where we're using pretty much nothing. As Windows is accessing the files, we're able to sneak a few packets in, but it's using virtually nothing. And as soon as that transfer finishes, we ramp straight back up again. We'll try again with a larger file, and we'll see as soon as that transfer starts, back all the way off. And then when that completes, we'll resume maximum utilization of that link. So if you can imagine the implications that this has, you've got a lot of data to get out. And this means that by actively monitoring and predicting congestion on that link, we're able to send data any time of day across any link without causing any sort of network congestion whatsoever. Now, is there any questions on the predictive bandwidth harvesting? So the next technology I'd like to show you is zero footprint caching. Now, when you send this data, this large quantity of data, across the WAN, what do you do with it then? You need somewhere to store it. So typically, you'd have a distribution point sitting at your remote location, and you store all your data on there. Now, we provide a solution where you can get rid of all your distribution points, along with the associated roles, Pixie service points, state migration points, and we'll actually store this data in the unallocated clusters on your peer machines, on your client estate. So we've come up with this with our own file system, similar to NTFS. The main difference being is that with NTFS, as soon as a cluster is allocated to a file, it is marked as used. We will not mark that file that cluster as used when we write to it. So we will work with NTFS to manage the sequence in which clusters are allocated, and we'll store this in unallocated disk space, which means that this disk space will appear free and unused to the OS and to the user, even though we're using it for our files. And I've got a demonstration of how this works. So I've got a virtual machine here. I'm just going to launch this utility. This is a freeware utility that you can download off the web. This is not something that we've written. And this shows a graphical representation of the disk allocation. And we can see here we've got current free space, 82 gig. I've got a file here, 3.2 gig in ctemp. Now, if I make a copy of this file, and I'll paste this copy back into ctemp, we're going to see this free space drop by 3 gig, which it did. if I then flick over to the Adaptiva cache, which looks like a standard NTFS file, watch what happens to this free space when I drag the same file into this location. So we can see currently we've got an Adaptiva cache size of 11.2 gig, and we've got free space of 78.9 gig. So I'm going to take the same file and copy it into the Adaptiva cache. We see Adaptiva cache has gone up by 14 gig, but our free space has remained at 78.9 gig. So we're storing this in the free space in the unallocated clusters, which means if I look at this from the view that the user will see, I still have all my free space. Which means, in the case of this example, the Adaptiva cache can grow to 78.9 gig, and that space will still be available to the OS and to the end user. So what happens when the Adaptiva cache is 78 gig? Well, we will actively manage that cache and coordinate that with the other peers on that same subnet. So we're aware of what content we have in our cache, and we're aware of what content our peers have in theirs. Which means that when the hard disk is full because of Adaptiva content, we will actually delete the piece of content seamlessly and automatically that is most prevalent on that subnet, that exists on the most sources. Sure. So the way it will work is if you was to send your entire operating system content to a subnet of, say, 50 machines, one machine on that subnet will start downloading a piece of content. We will only ever have one WAN transfer per office going on at any one time. So that piece of content will be downloaded over the WAN, and at the same time that that's being downloaded, it's going to be simultaneously distributed to two other sources. Okay, so you will end up with three machines on that subnet that have that content.
Okay. So all three machines will have
30 feet
of content?
No, so the content will be split out amongst the estate. So the machine that's downloading of the WAN will spread that content out, and then a new election process will take place for the other pieces of content. So each individual piece of content that's part of that operating system sort of bundle, so each application, each driver package, each software update, they will all be evaluated one by one, and the best source will be determined at runtime and spread out amongst that office location. Okay, so this will actually come up in the fourth technology. So, but the way it will work is the machine that's downloading over the WAN, as I say, will spread this content out to two other sources as it's downloading, and it's doing this in memory. So it's what we call the memory pipeline architecture. So the machine that's downloading over the WAN, at the same time as it receives each block of data, is sending that data, whilst it's still in memory, into memory of two other sources. They all get written at the same time, which means that if that machine that's downloading of the WAN were to go offline, one of those other two machines would pick up that WAN transfer, would continue the download, and would pick one other source. So there's always going to be three.
About the caching mechanism, I wanted to ask, let's assume we got a
say this 10 gigabyte package is being set in SCCM to download and execute anyway, it'll be in every client cache anyway. So the question is now, in conjunction with Adaptiva, would that 10 gigabytes additionally be cached in the Adaptiva cache, or can it be obtained from the, let's call it, Microsoft cache?
I see. So the question is the content duplicated between the Adaptiva cache and the SCCM cache? Yeah, so all content is compressed server-side before it's ever sent over the WAN. So the content that's going to be stored in the Adaptiva cache is going to be significantly less than that stored in the SCCM cache. But there would be a point where you'd have both. Maybe it wouldn't be on every machine, but one machine on that subnet would have the operating system content in its Adaptiva cache, and then when that's needed by another machine, that would be downloaded sort of on demand and transferred into the Config Manager cache.
Okay, maybe let's first of all skip the operating system's content and let's just talk about additional applications, right?
Sure.
Additional packages.
Yeah.
So let's assume we got a client which was never without Adaptiva, right? So from the very beginning, it was always with Adaptiva. So now there comes a new, let's say, Adobe Photoshop package, which is required by the location. And one of these clients, which always had Adaptiva installed, is going to download the Photoshop package. So is it then capable only to cache it in the Adaptiva cache, and so that it's not anymore required to put it in the Microsoft cache, or how is that going?
So the Adaptiva cache is purely used for the download of the content, and the SCCM cache is still used for the installation of that content. So it will always exist in the Adaptiva cache after download, and then that is then transferred into the Config Manager cache upon request for install.
But then it means that in such a case it would be duplicated, right?
Yes, it would, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. To a certain extent. It's not an exact duplicate because it's going to be a lot less because it's compressed in the Adaptiva cache. It's compressed content. But it does exist in both locations, yeah. When it's in the Config Manager cache, it's uncompressed.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So any other questions on the caching file system? No. Okay. So I'll just jump back into here. So the fourth technology is the memory pipeline architecture, and I sort of quickly brushed on this, but I have a report to show you that will explain it a little bit further. So this is a content download report, and this shows I've picked a software distribution that I did a couple of days ago. Just as a test, distributing a Medium package to all client systems in my state. So I've got about 30 client systems. What's interesting in this report, two things. Firstly is this LAN and WAN cost. So we can see here, we've only got a WAN cost associated with one machine. So I've distributed this to my entire state, and only one machine has downloaded this over the WAN. All the others have downloaded it locally from a LAN source. But we can see here the download source, and you'll notice that every single one of these sources is different. So we don't form a one-to-many connection. We'll actually form a pipeline. So one machine will feed to another, that will feed to another, and we'll sort of daisy chain it down the pipeline. And we're doing this in memory, which means that as one machine receives it. It's going to send it directly out of memory into memory on the downward node, and then as they all receive it, they're all writing into their adaptive cache at the same time, which means that if any of the nodes in the chain drop offline or they undock their laptop and go to another office, the chain is automatically reformed, and that download continues at exactly the same point. See, there's never a case where you need to restart a download. Okay. If I just scroll a bit further down, we'll see we've got two other machines here, two different subnets, both received across the WAN. So it's one WAN download per office location. So any questions on the memory pipeline architecture?
Yeah, maybe that's a redundant question I'm asking now, but because of the previous one from doing all this, can a client which provides a certain content serve another client which needs this content only partially? Like, what I wanted to ask is there a possibility of a kind of segmented distribution so that, for example, only a part of a certain content is being derived from one client, and then maybe when this client, for example, hibernates or whatever, or roots, then the other one which is pulling, so to say, can switch over to another one again, or is it all...
Absolutely, yes, that will be automatically reformed. So that, if any machine that's downloading that content were to go offline, there'd be partial content there, and that partial content would be, the rest of that content would be resumed from another source. Yes. Yeah. Any other questions? Okay, so with operating system deployment, it's all very well getting the content on demand when you need it, but what happens if you need to send this content out in advance of a deployment, which is usually the case? So if I flick back into the workbench, we have content push. Content push allows you to send content out in advance of any sort of deployment. So if I create a new content push policy, it's very easy to configure, and there's a lot of intelligence behind this. So first thing I'll do is just flick over to the content list, and in this content list I can drag in any type of content I like, so an SCCM package, an application, and even a task sequence. So if I bring in Windows 8.1, Windows 10, you can see that when I drag in an operating system, it brings with it all referenced pieces of content. I can then flick back to the general tab, and I can specify at the bottom here a collection of machines that I want to send this content to. So I can say, send this content to all Windows 8.1 devices, for example. And this is just a standard config manager collection, so you can build this on any rules you like, logic-based or direct membership. I can then add a schedule. I can say, send this out as soon as possible. And then I can scroll up here, and this is where the intelligence comes in. So I can specify a minimum number of sources in each office location where this content should exist. So I can say 3 machines, 5 machines, and then I can create multiple policies for different sizes of offices. So I can say in this office, or in this, for these groups of machines, for each office, I want 5 sources for each piece of content that's referenced in my content list. And what this will do, with that tick box ticked, it will take the members of this collection, and it will ignore the members themselves, but from those members, it will retrieve the distinct list of offices that those members belong. So for each office, it will send down over the WAN once, and then distribute out to however many sources you specified here. And then you can add in another schedule. So you can say, in addition to ASAP, every day at 8 a.m., revalidate that policy and ensure there are still 5 machines in that office location that have that source. Which means you've got a high level of redundancy for all of your application content. Because it will mean that if 2 machines are decommissioned, another one goes offline, now you've only got 2 machines in that office. The next day at 8 a.m., that will get reevaluated, and across the LAN, 3 other sources will be determined and the content pushed to those. Any questions on delivery of content, pushing out using content push? Okay, the next thing I'd like to show you is policy bandwidth management. Policy bandwidth management works in conjunction with your standard config manager policies. So typically, every machine will poll for policies on a schedule. Default is every hour, but in lots of instances, this is reduced. So in your environment, you may have reduced that to 10, 15 minutes. But that means that every 10, 15 minutes, or by default, every hour, all of your clients are going to be polling for policies from your management point. This, depending on the number of clients, puts quite a lot of strain on the management point and on your SQL server, as each policy request is a separate SQL query. So what this enables you to do is effectively turn that policy polling into a policy push. So you can increase your policy polling schedule to the maximum allowed, which is once every 24 hours. And when a new policy is assigned to a client, that policy request is automatically requested by that client. So when there's new policies available, that client will request those policies, and they will be delivered instantly. So this has a couple of key benefits. Firstly, it means that you're taking a huge strain off your management point and your SQL server. And secondly, it means that your clients are getting that content or that deployment, start the deployment process within a few seconds rather than 10 minutes, 15 minutes, or even an hour by default case. So it's one tick box to enable that, and it's 2 very nice benefits. Any questions around policy bandwidth management? Okay. So you sent your operating system deployment content out to all your sites, and you don't really know whether it's got there or not. With the latest version of Adaptiva, we've actually introduced a couple of new views into where your content is and how the distribution process is going. So we've got here a view here, so I can view the content distribution status for a particular package. I can select an office, so I can say office B, show me the clients that have this package. So I can see a list of clients here that have this package. And I can also see in real time the current distribution status of a content item or for an office location. So I've got a quick video for this. So I'm going to select a piece of content. I'm going to view the current WAN transfer status for this piece of content. We can see that we've got 3 active transfers happening for this piece of content. I can right-click, and I can show the details, and it will show the source machine, destination office, the current download priority, and the current status, download status, time remaining, and percentage for that transfer. I can right-click and I can cancel one of those transfers, or I can come in here and I can either increase or decrease the priority of that transfer if I need to get it out quicker than other pieces of content that might be going across that same WAN. I can also pause the transfer and then obviously resume that again at a later date. So I can cancel the pause on that. Okay. So at the start, I mentioned that Pixie was programmable. I'm going to quickly show you how this is programmable. The whole product is based around a very powerful workflow engine. So in this workflow engine, you can create workflows to do all sorts of tasks. So I can come in here and I can create a workflow. And I've got over 100 different activities that are available to me in this workflow. So if I wanted to look up a machine in a database, I could use the SQL command. I can specify a SQL statement to execute, and then I can specify what to do with the results. And this workflow engine includes all sorts of standard programming concepts such as if logic, while loops, recursion, iteration, all sorts. So I can add in an if statement, and I can say, if this machine exists in this database, then proceed with the Pixie request. If it doesn't, then abort. Don't let this machine Pixie boot. So this workflow engine, as I say, can be used for Pixie, but it can also be used for all sorts of other things. So you can deploy these workflows as part of content push policies to clients and have them execute tasks as part of the content push policy and include logic in there to decide what to do after, during content is downloaded or the policy is executed on that machine. Okay. So the one other thing I'd like to show you is actually controlling clients. So there may be some clients in your environment that you either want to prioritize for content. There may be machines that you want to prohibit from receiving content. So we have 3 standard client types available. We have prohibited clients, we have standard clients, and we have preferred clients. your preferred clients may be machines that are always online. Maybe you have redundant file and print servers sitting with loads of disk space in an office, and you want to use those for your primary source of content. You can mark those as preferred. And again, this is all based on Config Manager collections. So you can build a collection containing all of your file and print servers, and then you can apply a setting within this management console to mark those as preferred. So they will be chosen ahead of any other clients for storing that content for their peers. You can also set prohibited clients, whereby they will never be used as a content source for other clients. Okay, so I'm just going to check on this machine, and it's built. So I'm just going to log into that machine, and we've successfully deployed Windows 10 to this virtual machine without any infrastructure whatsoever. Okay, so any questions at all?
Well, if we build many machines in parallel, would it pick the same source as for Pixie booting all the time, or will it pick randomly any of the other lines that are already finished?
No, so we have load balancing built in, so if there's multiple machines Pixie booting, they will choose a different source for retrieving that boot image.
Okay.
And also for content, yes. So
every package is a new election then.
There's a new election every time a package is downloaded, and we will take upload count into consideration when we're choosing a machine to do the download. Any other questions? Okay, well, we're a little bit ahead of schedule, but if there's no other questions, I'd just say thank you very much. If any of you have not yet popped by the booth, we are raffling off tomorrow a set of Bose speakers, Bluetooth speakers. They look very nice. If you wanted to pop by and drop your name down, we'll enter you into the raffle. But if there's no other questions, then yes, thank you for your time. Yeah.